Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. It's House.
I just think that's awful.
Rooster.
So that would be a quality pick if you can get that guy.
And Pope.
God, he just loves the spotlight.
Welcome to SMQBs episode 213. Hey guys, we've got House and Pope with us from Rooster.
Hey Rooster.
Come on, Rooster.
Before we get started, I want to thank one of our sponsors, Assembly Software, the developer of the original Needles, TrialWorks, case management programs, and now Neos, which is cloud-based, and also with some interesting AI components that they're recently released. If you need a great case management system, contact Assembly Software.
Our law firm uses Assembly, and we love Neos, and my staff loves it, and looking forward to working with them over the next year, including incorporating some of those AI components.
All right. House, who are you taking to the bar this week?
I am taking Roger Goodell to the bar. You know that I'm a staunch defender of the brotherly shove of the tush push. And during draft weekend, Roger Goodell was asked in one of these interviews about it. And I just don't feel like the commissioner should be putting his thumb on the scale. And he basically said it's not really a football play. And he said that it's going to come back up for a vote, signaling that he's going to end it. And I think that's the wrong role of the commissioner. And so I'm going to, I'm probably going to lace his drink at the bar.
He doesn't get a vote though, does he?
No, but he can put a thumb on the scale.
Yeah, he's got the thumb on the scale.
Seemed like the owners in favor of keeping it had a pretty substantial margin, right?
So far, but they could have killed it, and they didn't kill it. And so it's coming back up for a vote. Seems like Goodell's finding a way to kill it.
All right. Pope, who are you taking to the bar?
I'm bringing the Cowboys' new head coach, Brian Schottenheimer, to the bar and actually congratulate him on what's been thought of as a fairly good draft for the Cowboys. We'll get in that in a minute. But I want to know the inner workings of the war room when Shador started sliding. If they had to tie Jerry down and hog tie him to prevent him from trying to jump up and grab him. So that would be a fascinating discussion.
Well, I'm going to take our missing, one of our missing comrades, Bison, to the bar and congratulate him on the Commanders finally getting the green light to redevelop their stadium at the old RFK site. Unfortunately, won't be ready till about 2030, but I know he's excited and it'll be fun to see.
That looks amazing. Like the last graph I saw, you could see the Capitol like in the window.
Yeah, it's just the perfect spot for it. Where it is now is so bad. I mean, it's impossible to get to. Traffic's horrible. Parking, the whole bit is terrible. Before we move on, I just want to thank another one of our sponsors, Digital Law Marketing, which is, in my opinion, the number one marketing firm for law firms. They do websites, they do social media marketing, and if you want a company that provides results in the form of new clients, go to digitallawmarketing.com. Guys, let's jump into the NFL draft. It's been analyzed to death at this point, so I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty, but let's start out with some like big global takeaways. I'll go first. You know, for a draft that was kind of poo-pooed for not having a lot of star power, you know, because there's not many superstar quarterbacks in this particular draft, I was impressed by how many teams came away from the draft with a handful of quality starters. This was a solid, solid draft for almost all but four or five teams in the NFL, including teams that picked really late because they were so good last year, such as House's Eagles, the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens. I mean, these teams made solid selections and really improved their team. Just as predicted by us, Josh Simmons, maybe the best offensive tackle in the draft if he were healthy, went to the Chiefs, which they desperately needed. What do you guys think? I mean, I think this was a real high-quality draft without a lot of splash.
Well, there weren't a lot of surprises. You know, a lot of times on draft night, you have a lot of surprises with moves up, moves down. And it was pretty stable, despite all the rumors about, you know, the Browns and Giants shopping their picks and, you know, would Travis end up where he ended up. But again, you know, this draft, I think, Rooster, to your point, there was a lot of needs that were filled. And, you know, the splashy offensive star positions, running back and quarterback and receiver, was very scarce in the first round. Once you got past Cam Ward and Ashton Jeanty and the guy out of receiver out of Arizona, you had to go to the 20th pick to get another guy or 19th pick to get another skill set offensive guy. So a lot of needs in the trenches.
I thought that with the exception of I thought the NFC East had a very, very, very good draft overall as a division.
Yep.
I thought with the exception of what I still think was a gaffe by the Cowboys at 12, I thought the Cowboys had a very good draft. And that was the only major surprise in the first round, other than, of course, what we'll talk about Shador in a second. But as I said on the pod, I give credit to some of these teams that hit what they really needed to do. For example, I said that if the Chiefs with that pick did not take an offensive line after what they did to Mahomes in that Super Bowl, it would have been managerial malpractice. And sure enough, they landed a great one. Mm-hmm. And likewise, you know, with the Eagles losing Josh Sweat and Brandon Graham, they didn't have a lot of holes, but they needed an edge rusher. And, you know, they hit a home run with value with Jahad Campbell.
Home run.
For me, there's a couple of surprises about this draft. My takeaways. One is I can't remember, and maybe this is a Shador effect, I cannot remember a number one overall pick with such little fanfare.
Yeah.
It's like nobody's talking about the Cam Ward draft.
Right. It's a combination, I think, of the Shador historic slide and the big trade to jump up and take Travis Hunter.
I think there's that. I think that NFL general managers are starting to understand the predictability that is brought by the SEC and the Big Ten. I think something like 25 or 26 of the first of the 32 teams that drafted in the first round selected an SEC or Big Ten player, the highest ever in the draft. And that's not necessarily a predictor that they're all going to be successful. But I think if we're just going on trends and data, those kinds of players playing against, you know, iron sharpens iron, like that they're going against the best. And they're going to have to go against the best. I thought the Jacksonville thing was a pretty big overpay, particularly if they're only going to play him on predominantly on one side of the ball. I'm not really sure. I mean, he's obviously a very, very special player, but does he change the field that much that you give up that much?
Yeah, I agree with you.
I want to address real quick the Cowboys at 12, because that's right. I mean, we were all stunned that a guy that I think the consensus house was probably in the late first, early second round went as high as 12. And I was telling somebody the other day that this just is indicative to me that Jerry has lost his edge, because when Jimmy was here, they would trade down and they would get multiple picks and they'd still get their guy. I mean, easily they could have traded down from 12 down into the, you know, late teens, early 20s, and for sure got their guy and racked up some more higher draft picks. So I think it's a solid pick. I think the criticism is valid that it came off way too early and they didn't get enough for the potential. I mean, they had a shitty season. They got the 12th pick for a reason, and they fumbled it all away on draft night by picking like a team that had, you know, barely lost their division.
Well, Pope, the guy who runs your draft is Will McKay, is that it?
Yeah, Will McKay. He's been there forever.
So do you think that Jerry forced the Booker pick on him with 12? Because normally McKay is super solid with draft picks.
Yeah, well, you understand, we don't have a GM. I mean, McKay acts like one sometimes during the draft, but in the war room, ultimately the buck stops with Jerry. And they, you know, felt like their offensive guys, Jeanty and the receiver from Arizona, McMillan, they had targeted those guys. But once they were gone, they took, you know, next available best player they on their board, which was Booker. But again, I think that's a misreading of the draft on their part. And it cost them, I think, maybe a couple good picks.
Well, your second and third round picks were
solid. A's. Absolutely. Solid. Home runs. The edge guy from Boston College. And then
Siobhan Revel.
Yeah, Siobhan Revel, the cornerback, who's he had an ACL. And other than that, he would have been probably high.
House, what was the most interesting Eagles pick for you?
They got this kid, Ty Robinson, from Nebraska. There, a couple of really interesting things happened with the Eagles, which I really give credit to Howie and Nick Sirianni for listening to their current players. Eagles signed two undrafted free agents that played alongside Quinyon Mitchell at Toledo. And they, of course, drafted Ty Robinson as a defensive tackle from Nebraska that would practice on the other side of their current center, Cam Jurgens. I like that. I like that a lot. Again, it's not necessarily a predictor, but this guy, Robinson, next to, you know, Carter or Davis, boy, oh boy. I mean, I love that pick a lot. They gave a lot of attention to how players perform this year at the Senior Bowl, and they got a guy for depth, you know, which I guess you can do as a Super Bowl champion, but they got a guy for depth from Boston College, which has traditionally been a pretty good place where centers come out of. They got a center from Boston College to back up Jurgens, who just dominated the best of the best there. So I think they got a lot of value all the way through. An interesting one is that they took Colin McCord as a quarterback. I like that Howie does this whole notion of stockpiling what could be value of the most important position. So they'll come in the season, of course, with Jalen. And then they've got these Tanner McKee and Kyle McCord, who had a very prolific career at Syracuse. And those are now assets. But Rooster, I want to ask you, while we talk about quarterback, there's been a lot said both ways about Jackson Dart. I don't think you loved it, but I don't know if after sleeping a couple days on, if you're looking at this any differently.
I didn't love it at the time, only because of the system he's coming out of.
Lane Kiffin?
Yeah, but the more I read, the more hopeful I am that he's got the physical attributes to be a player 2 or 3 years from now worth that draft pick. I didn't love the pick, and I didn't love trading up to get it, because I think they could have stayed put and gotten him or someone as good without giving up picks to do it. I still think Shadur is as good as Dart, and I think there are others. But I'll tell you this, it's interesting that you brought up to Nebraska as when you were talking about what was interesting about the Eagles picks. One of the picks that I find very interesting the Giants made is the tight end Fidone from Nebraska. Coming out of high school, this guy was the number one rated tight end. He was rated ahead of Brock Bowers. And then he tore his ACL twice, 2 years in a row.
Wow.
If he's healthy, they may have just gotten a steal. And then, of course, they got Cam Scadabo, who could become a legend in New York if he continues to play the way he was able to play in college. I suspect that he's not going to be running over NFL players quite so easily.
I mean, you got the next generation, Micah Parsons. I love your draft.
Interestingly, he asked Lawrence Taylor for number 56, and Taylor told him, get your own number.
Yeah, that was the only knock I had on Abdul Carter. Like, come on, dude. Like that.
Yeah.
You don't ask that question.
You don't get LT's number.
I mean, LT's like, create your own legacy.
Yeah.
You know, before we move on and talk about this historic slide of Shadur Sanders in the draft, I want to remind you guys that a year ago at about this time, everybody was picking Quinn Ewers to be the number one pick in the draft. And he went to in the seventh round. Pretty remarkable slide there without much fanfare.
I think as the season went on last year and as Texas had its own slide towards the end and Quinn Ewers did not really step up, I think that crushed his stock in the draft. I think seventh round is great value. I don't think Quinn Ewers is going to be a super NFL quarterback, but I still think he has potential. And he can make a lot of throws. He's an athletic kid. You know, this whole slide of Will Howard and Quinn Ewers, I think with quarterback, there's a lot more different evaluations than just did you play at Texas or did you play at Ohio State? That's why a kid from, Louisville can be taken by the Saints. If you've watched some of the throws that that kid has made,
good and bad.
But I just think there's like a total different evaluation. It wouldn't surprise me. Ewers is another guy. Look, he's not going to be a sixth or seventh round like Tom Brady, but it wouldn't surprise me if he becomes a serviceable quarterback. And he was deserving. I don't know what the right round was for him. Probably not seventh, but yeah, that was a pretty big slide.
I have hopes for him higher than that. I think that he injured his shoulder, his throwing arm, then he injured his plant foot. And so last year's performance was just marred by pretty significant injuries for a quarterback. I paid pretty close attention to the quarterbacks at the combine this year, and he had the best ball coming out of all of them, the tightest spiral of all of them. And there were guys like Howard who were sailing 7-yard passes over the guy's head, even though he wasn't covered. Same thing with Dylan Gabriel from Oregon. Same thing with Riley, what is it, from Notre Dame. These guys could not hit the broadside of a barn. Maybe they were nervous, but Ewers stepped up and was just whizzing spirals in there and made every single throw. He looked elite compared to those three guys.
Should we use that Dylan Gabriel as a jumping off point to get into the Shador talk?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Mel on this. Anyone drafting Dylan Gabriel ahead of Shador should have their head examined, but I know you guys disagree. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I'm saying is Deion, I mean, kick it off, but Deion said today that Shador will take a backseat to no quarterback on that team.
Shador is taking a different attitude than his big mouth dad and acknowledging that maybe I could have handled the pre-draft better than I did. And I think he was, you know, honestly showed joy and gratitude when Cleveland picked him. And is saying all the right things like right now. Like, I just need to prove to them that they made the right decision.
He needs to fire his dad as an agent to prove that he's going to be somebody different.
Yeah.
One of us, while we were watching the draft, sent around a text. I think we were all kind of trying to make sense of this slide and decide whether or not it was fair or not fair. And somebody wrote about how the wide receiver one is a diva every single Sunday. And like, why are we making such a big deal? And I think one of the reasons is because I'm trying to think of a comp at quarterback acting like a wide receiver one diva the way Shador did pre-draft and during the draft. It's pretty unusual. It is pretty unusual. I mean, I know Cam Newton was a little flashy when he came in. But most of these guys, the quarterback is a humble guy that needs to get into that huddle, get the team under control, put them on the back and say, let's do this together as a team. This guy spells team with all bunch of I's. That's what it looks like to me.
I just disagree. And I think that there's a bit of a double standard going on here. And I will point to two examples of exactly the same pre-draft behavior. John Elway refusing to go to the Colts if drafted, which he was. And then even more egregious, Archie Manning, trying to manipulate the draft of Eli Manning by telling the Chargers, do not draft him. If you do, he won't show up. And sure enough, both guys held their breath and got their way. And Elway winds up getting traded to the Broncos, and Eli gets traded to the Giants. It's the same behavior, but no one got too exercised about either one of those guys pulling that stuff. Now, the difference with Shador is he showed up and acted like an infant at some of these pre-draft interviews on the teams that, A, he didn't want to play for, or B, just thought they shouldn't be wasting his time with tough questions. And one of them, I think, was the Giants. And I'm pretty sure that Daboll is partially responsible for this anonymous bad-mouthing of Shador, because everybody who interviews with certain coaches, like Daboll, like Chucky, right, they know that Gruden or Daboll or some of these guys are going to hit you with some scheme questions. All right, you're lined up in this offense, and you see this defense. What's your read? What are you calling? And apparently Shador just got pissed off at him and was like, don't ask me that kind of stuff. And then Daboll got furious with Shador. And I think he bashed him behind his back, and it made a big impact. That's on both of them, mostly on Shadur. I'm pretty sure that Eli Manning and John Elway had enough self-respect and respect for the process that even though they weren't going to play for the Colts and the Chargers respectively, they didn't show up and make asses of themselves in their interviews. To me, that's the difference.
They didn't have a studio with Legendary painted all over it, you know, wall cover for the draft night either. So, I mean, you know, Dion didn't do any favors for his son. And so at some point you did get the feeling, though, that it was almost like the NFL executives are
colluding
or collaborating on not picking Shadur until later rounds. I mean, based on talent alone, he should have gone at least in the second round. Okay, message sent, but come on, man.
Who's the Steelers quarterback right now?
Does
anyone know?
Is it Justin Fields? I don't know.
No, that's the Jets quarterback.
Okay.
Steelers passed on him two or three times? Are you kidding me?
You know, there's another interesting aspect to all of this, which I actually have not heard very much about over draft weekend. Next year, it's thought to be a legendary class of quarterbacks coming out of the draft, headed with Arch Manning. There are several top quarterbacks. What you're going to see next year is maybe as many as 5 or 10 quarterbacks going in the first round. And so if you're a GM and you're thinking that this investment is, you know, $100 million investment, a lot of pressure if you draft in the first round to play him this season, to make that now commitment, this is our guy, that if it fails, if Shadur Sanders were to start for the Steelers this year and have a tough time, that would be a lot of pressure to say, based on a one-year experiment, we're going to abandon it and draft next year. So I think some of the reason for the slide is that these GMs were weighing the decision, do I want to take the circus despite how much talent I have, or would I just be better off waiting for next year when there's a legendary draft class? Because if I take Shadur, I'm pot committed for a few years.
Right, but if you're the Steelers and you're planning on winning 9 or 10 games next year like you do every year, you may not get Arch Manning.
Yeah, it's true. I think the circus that comes with Shadur cannot be denied. What I wrote to you guys on the text was how the whole LeVar Ball thing work out for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about that.
It just, you know, it's a shame because all three of those kids had tremendous potential. And yeah, injuries got in the way. And yeah, basketball's not football, but the dad just clouded the potential and the career of those kids. And I think if you're a smart GM and you ask yourself, what comes along with this? Does it come along with like tweets from the president and Dion in the locker room and Dion saying you better get more plays for my kid? And I just think people don't want that.
That's a lot of drama for a backup quarterback. And that's why he just kept sliding, because nobody wanted to take a backup quarterback with that baggage.
And, you know, look, I mean, there's so many pundits that said this over the weekend. Trey Wingo was one of them. They basically were saying, look, here's the deal. Forget about the collusion. Forget about, you know, his talent. The bottom line is, forget about race. These teams, they don't like him. Now, they could be wrong about that. They could be wrong, but this is not about collusion. This is not about a race issue. They just don't like him either as a player or as a person. It's as simple as that. And I don't know that these teams were literally calling up each other and saying, don't get near this guy. Now, look, apparently on that Dable story, apparently the Giants franchise was divided about him. And I think they went into it with the notion that hopefully they would take him. And they gave him a simple test. Here's the playbook. Come in for your pre-draft interview and talk about it. And he blew it off. And like you said, once Dable asked him some questions about it and he threw attitude, like, I don't have to do this. That's not part of the pre-draft process. Yeah, I'm running away from that too.
Yep. So hopefully he's learned a good lesson, gets a little humble, and works his ass off, because I think he's got the goods to be a starting quarterback in a league that has had some pretty mediocre guys starting in the last, I mean, there's just a dearth of quarterbacks. And whoever's starting for the Steelers this season is worse than Shedeur Sanders is right now. I'm telling you that.
Deshaun Watson, Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders. Which two of those are getting the pink slip?
If I'm the GM, it's Dylan Gabriel and Kenny Pickett.
Boy, it'd be tough to cut Dylan as high as you drafted him.
He sucks. He sucks. And well, Kenny Pickett sucks. And actually, they should just cut Deshaun Watson outright. I think Shador's better than every one of those guys.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch.
They got decisions to make for sure. And if you saw the coach and the GM, I mean, they look like when they had drafted Shedeur that they were attending a funeral. Like, this was a decision that had been made by the owner that decided at the end of the day, okay, at this point, we can't let him slip. We're just going to take him. And they look like, what the F are we doing? We just drafted two quarterbacks within a couple rounds of each other. Like, what are we doing?
They should have taken Shedeur when they took Dylan Gabriel and drafted another receiver, which they need. Anyway, let's move on to the NBA because I know you guys have places to go. there were some good games this weekend. Tough games. It reminded me of 80s and 90s NBA style basketball. But Pope, it turns out you were actually right about the Lakers Wolves series. It looks like the Lakers are going down. They had to play their starters all minutes of the second half. Zero substitutions in the second half. Their bench is terrible.
You know how many points they got off their bench in game four?
No, not many.
Six.
On the other hand, the T-Wolves have got 43 points out of Ant, 25 out of Julius Randle, and 16 points and 11 rebounds out of Jaden McDaniels. So my question, guys, is are the T-Wolves now the second-best team in the West?
Yes.
I think House called that. House call beginning before the playoffs.
I hope we get to see that Oklahoma City T-Wolves series. But again, if you're Pelinka and the Lakers and you recognize you got young teams like Oklahoma City and the T-Wolves and Houston in your way, it's not like Luka's long in the tooth, of course. He's not, but LeBron is. There aren't a lot of other pieces there. What do you do in the offseason there? You just went, all in on this Luka LeBron development. I don't know. This is a big fizzle. If it ends up being 4-1 or 4-2 and they, and the T-Wolves dispense with them pretty easily, that's a big fizzle.
Well, they have no rim protection. I mean, I said the biggest problem they had wasn't necessarily trading AD, but was not getting somebody like, remember, Mark Williams was supposed to be the rim protector, and that trade fell through. And they didn't do anything about it. They felt like they can go through the playoffs without a rim protector. And look at the points in the paint. They are getting massively outscored by the T-Wolves in the paint.
Interesting thing I saw was they're walking off the court after the loss, and the cameras follow the stars into the locker room. And Luka was coming in ahead of LeBron, and Luka had his shirt untucked. And from the back, he just looks like such a little doughboy. I mean, he's got the love handles hanging over his shorts, and then LeBron's walking behind him all chiseled, and you could see LeBron kind of just like staring at Luka, and I'm sure he's saying, get your ass in shape, motherfucker.
Yeah, but that doughboy had 38 points.
Yeah, but still.
I mean, come on.
He doesn't play any defense, though. He doesn't play any defense in the
you
process.
You can't put this loss on Luka.
Well, he doesn't play any defense, and LeBron plays both ways.
Well, he's got no rim protection, because last year when players would get past Luka, they had to deal with Gafford or Lively for Dallas. That's why they went to the finals.
Go ahead, House.
Two things. One is, speaking of Doughboys, that might be one of the best and most historic airballs of all time by your MVP, Jokic. Just unbelievable. To that Aaron Gordon. I mean, I must have seen that eight times, each time thinking the buzzer went off. But I guess it, I mean, talk about, that's probably like a thousandth of a second that it beat.
One tenth of a second is what they said, yeah.
Crazy. That, and I want to say that on the East, I think the Knicks, I mean, the Cleveland's looking downright scary, although the Heat suck. But I think the Knicks and the Celtics are really going to be steeled by these series. And I mean really improving through it. Orlando's not a joke.
No.
And they're not even playing healthy. And the Pistons are not a joke and are going to be one to watch next year. I am impressed how the Knicks and the Celtics are fighting off two really hard warriors coming at them.
Banchero is the man. I mean, if you've watched any of that series, that guy is like a grown man playing among boys sometimes.
Yep.
The problem the Magic have is they've got two really established scorers and they're playing a team that on any given night has four. You know, Devin White's scoring in the 20s, 19 points the other night.
Well, real quickly, the other two series in the West are also going to be nip and tuck. Nuggets, Clippers, you know, you alluded to that. Buzzer beater, Derek Wittenberg type, Thurl Bailey dunk, or Lorenzo Charles, excuse me. And the Rockets, Warriors, you know, with playoff Jimmy out, can they win two more games? I don't know. But even
he's
if they do.
He's supposed to play next game.
Tonight.
Yeah,
he's playing. But he's still questionable.
Right. Well,
we'll see. That's a pretty bad fall he had. But either way, House, I'm with you now. I think the T-Wolves are going to take care of, if the Warriors survive, they'll take care of the Warriors. And Nuggets-Clippers, I think it's going seven, and it's a war. Yeah. I mean, except for a Clipper blowout, almost 40.
There was a fight that got six people teed up in that game.
Yeah.
I saw every second of the Knicks-Pistons game. And it, you talk about wars. The refs were calling nothing in that game. Nothing.
Yep.
To the point where Brunson got hurt on one hard foul. But the Pistons were playing like they had Bill Laimbeer on their team and were doing nothing but hard fouls the whole game and not getting called for it. And so I don't feel too sorry for them on the last play of the game. Josh Hart clearly fouled the guy who was attempting a three down one in the last second of the game. That was a foul, but they didn't call that all game, so they can't call it then. The amazing part about that game to me was Karl Anthony Towns looked like Steph Curry from three at the end of that game. It was amazing. You should run that back and watch some of his threes at the end of that game, you know, practically from the logo. And he played the entire third, fourth quarter with four fouls and then got his fifth and still kept his head for once in his damn career. So that was a breakout game.
That's a trade that's going to work out for both teams.
Well, until they trade him for Giannis.
Well, and speaking of Giannis, I guess you guys saw the news on Dame.
Yeah, that's why I say Giannis is going to be on the block now because that team's toast.
And I feel bad for Dame. I mean, he's probably – that's a career-threatening
injury. Yeah, he's 34 years old and a blown Achilles.
He won't be playing next year with an Achilles tear.
Guy should have never left Portland.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, playoff basketball is just a far cry from the regular season lately, and it doesn't disappoint this year. House, tell us about the historic win by Liverpool.
Yeah, Liverpool I brought up a couple weeks ago as a lasso. This is just really crazy to bring in a first-year manager. There were some injuries early on in the season, and they just ran away with this league in a laugher, in a total dominating laugher. And big props to Arne Slot. Big props to Liverpool. You'll never walk alone, fellas. That is what you did this year was no one. I don't think anyone expected this. I mean, I think, like I said on the lasso, I think people expected Liverpool has enough fire to make it back to champions and finish in the top four. But to run away in a laugher in such a dominating fashion, is pretty impressive with an aging team, with a brand new manager replacing a legend in Jurgen Klopp. That's a pretty cool story.
House, real quick, because it was going to be one of my lassos. Tell us about Wrexham.
Well, that is a lasso. We'll jump ahead for, because I think Pope and I both have that one. But everybody knows about the incredible story of Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney that decided as a little pet project, because they had a little spare money on the side, that they'd buy a lower division team for $2.5 million. They bought a soccer club in England for $2.5 million. And all that soccer club has done is produced a documentary series on FX, added 3 million social media followers, added $35 million in annual revenue from a lower tier squad, and did something that has never been done. They made it up from fifth division up to fourth, from fourth up to third, and now from third up to the second to last league. They have gone 3 consecutive years of promotion, which is really hard to do, to finish top 2 out of the 20 teams, to get all the way up. And now they are in the championship division, which is one below the Premier League. And look out, I think the story is about to become a little bit more legendary, because there is a prolific scorer for Leicester named Jamie Vardy, who led Leicester to a historic championship in Prem a few years ago. And Jamie Vardy has decided that he's played his last match. And I think all signs point to a little bit of a flash signing for Wrexham to get Vardy. And if Wrexham gets Vardy and they continue this, they could pull off the alt. I mean, this is a true lasso. You could have a team that went from the fifth tier, which is, I mean, it's not quite beer league, but it's not at the top of the top, to go from fifth tier. And if they do it one more time to make Premier League, that it'd be like an all-time sports story, let alone soccer story. So they are definitely deserving of a lasso this week.
I read where they're worth $100 million right now. Net.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Any other lassos? All right, let's move on then to punchable faces. I've got one. I don't know if you guys saw the Netflix documentary on the Red Sox this year.
Yeah.
The Clubhouse, A Year of the Red Sox. And one of the features, one episode was Jaron Duran, who came out and talked about an attempted suicide that he had when he was at an all-time low in his mental health. Did it on Netflix publicly so that other people would see that they're not alone and see that he came out of that spiral of depression and hopefully help some people. This Sunday, the Red Sox are playing the Guardians in Cleveland, and some fan in the bleachers is yelling at him, you should have killed yourself, that kind of stuff, in earshot. He went ballistic, tried to go at the fan. The fan ran like a baby, escaped out of the concourse. But the Guardians have identified this guy and apologized as a team and an organization to Duran and the Red Sox, which is, I don't have any beef with the Guardians on this, but man, I hope they identify this fan and he gets his comeuppance, because what a douchebag.
That's bad.
I got one, and I think we all can agree on this one. The son of the Atlanta Falcons offensive coordinator, Jeff Ulbrich, is Jax Ulbrich, who's an Ole Miss guy and in college, and he got his dad's cell phone number for Shedeur Sanders, had given out his number on a special phone to only 32 executives of the NFL teams. And somehow the story is, and I guess we're going to find that out, is he saw that phone number on his dad's iPad without dad knowing it, took it, and he and another buddy prank called Shedeur Sanders on the second day of the draft and impersonated as Mickey Loomis, the GM for the Saints, and told him that he was getting ready to be picked by them. And then, 5 seconds later said, but you're going to have to wait a little bit longer, and then hung up. And it's been a viral video. Most of us have seen it. Now, to, I guess, his credit, he has come out and said, I was wrong. I apologize. I'd like to do anything I can to try to, fix the problem. But, man, you got to be punched for doing something that stupid. And just
that's just that mean.
The advantage of that guy's feelings and all that.
I will say, because of how high profile, I do think he's deserving of a punch. But what I've heard since is that apparently this isn't like specific to Shedeur. This happens in the draft. Apparently Kyle McCord from Syracuse got prank called. Apparently last year, Cooper DeJean, there's actually a video of it when he got prank called. I guess all of these people that are doing that are deserving of a punch, but I don't think this is just isolated to Shador. I think the kid should get a punch, and that should be the punishment for this kid, that the SMQBs punch him. I think a full-blown FBI, NFL investigation, all this other stuff, and or punishment of the Falcons or anything like that, I think they should just stop it. I think it's almost embarrassing to Shador for this to continue like this. I think it should end with a punch from the SMQBs. All right, so I think at that point, we are now on to buzzers. Pope, any buzzer from you?
Yeah, we'll just do a real quick buzzer and not recap the NHL, but obviously we're still in the middle of the playoff fight. We got some – all the Western series are tied at two, including the best team in hockey this year, Winnipeg, who's struggling against the Blues. The Stars and the Avs are tied at two. Looks like Avs potentially have a little bit of an advantage there. It'll be interesting to see a week from now. We'll have a better picture of what's going on second round.
I got a buzzer beater, and it is this ridiculous Bill Belichick interview that he gave to CBS morning Sunday morning show. I mean, I don't know what the guy was thinking. I just don't know what he was thinking. He shows up in this ripped up t-shirt, which is I guess his MO, but he's got his freaking 24-year-old girlfriend there sort of like skulking in the background during this interview. She's wearing nothing but a sweatshirt, no pants, bare legs, and looking like a kidnapped victim, frankly. I mean, just weird. She's just looking all freaked out and, you know, skulking in the background. And then when the interviewer asks, Bill, how'd you two meet? She pipes up and says, we're not answering that question. And so it was almost like she was trying to give a coded message to law enforcement to please get me out of here. I'm trapped. It was just so weird.
Here's my question. Does the University of North Carolina not have a media group that is going to say, we're okay with this interview, we're not okay with this interview? Like, what was he thinking? Like, what was anyone bizarre. Thinking to agree to this?
It's like, come on, granddad. You know, the gig's up. We get the male menopause phase, but move on, dude. That's just weird.
Well, let's wrap it up, Rooster.
Yeah, well, I want to thank one last sponsor before we sign off. Injury Board is hosting House and Pope and Bison, and of course Milk is the host, and many other lawyers from around the country, Canada and Western Europe right now out in Oregon at a networking event. I'm sorry I couldn't be there. But Injury Board is the premier networking organization for law firms, particularly plaintiffs' law firms. And if you're interested in getting involved in, you know, some of the best people from around the country and Western Europe and Canada, check out injuryboard.org. It's really a fantastic group. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.
All right.
See you next week.